All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. It's Anti-War Radio. And our next guest on the show today is Trevor Tim from the Electronic Frontier Foundation. That's EFF.org. And this article is our spotlight today on antiwar.com. Cablegate, 1 year later, how WikiLeaks has influenced foreign policy, journalism, and the First Amendment. Welcome to the show, Trevor. How are you doing?
Great. Thanks for having me.
Oh, I'm very happy to have you here. Great article today. And, you know, just the other day I was trying to come up with a bunch of examples off the top of my head about all the great stories that WikiLeaks was responsible for breaking over the past year. And I know I fell short, but you have a great little list in here. And so I was wondering if we could just start with that, maybe remind people a little bit of what we've learned from WikiLeaks.
Yeah, absolutely. So my article looks at six countries, basically the six countries that have been in the news the most in foreign policy terms, Libya, Pakistan, Yemen, Egypt, Tunisia, and Iraq. So Libya was a really interesting case because it kind of infuriated both American politicians and Gaddafi. Because back in the summer, Senator John McCain was probably one of the most vocal members of Congress that was criticizing Obama for not being aggressive enough towards Gaddafi and not sending in enough troops. But it was the WikiLeaks cable revealed that just 2 years earlier, Senator McCain had actually promised Gaddafi to arm him with U.S. military equipment. So it kind of brought out the hypocrisy in McCain's statements that he was just kind of pushing for war, even though he had claimed he was friends with Gaddafi just years earlier.
Mm-hmm. And in fact, that one was really funny because there had already kind of been a few critical articles in the media pointing out his cozy relationship and his trip that he made with Senators Lieberman and Graham over there. And he was already, I think, denying that anything untoward had gone on. And then the WikiLeaks cable on that issue hit that, you know, finally verified it and made him, you know, come out publicly denouncing the WikiLeaks for just not having the story right, and all that brought even more attention to it.
I know. He had made comments like he was meeting with Gaddafi. He was an interesting man. And, you know, this video of him shaking Gaddafi's hand and everything, but, you know, he denied making these statements, and then the cable came out and basically just proved he was lying. But, you know, on the flip side, the cables made Gaddafi look horrible too. He was a little crazy already, but they seemed to drive him more crazy. He was even accusing the CIA of leaking the documents just to undermine him. So, it kind of cut both ways in that situation. And then there's Pakistan, which, you know, with Osama bin Laden, being killed in August, the U.S. had gone in there without Pakistan's permission, with ground forces, or at least more than drones. And the WikiLeaks cables actually showed that we had been going into Pakistan for a long time before this ever happened, not just with drones, but with JSOC ground forces, and had been operating with the Pakistani military for quite some time. There had been a report in The Nation about this about a year ago, but the government actually strenuously denied the whole story. And then when the WikiLeaks cables came out, it basically confirmed that they were lying about that as well.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it may not be good politics for them, but I don't buy the story that the Pakistani military wasn't in on the Osama bin Laden raid for a minute. There's no way they did that without their loyal puppet Kiani being in on it. So, you know, worked really bad for Pakistan in terms of, you know, PR here in America, but of course, the degree of cooperation, to the degree he cooperated with the Americans, is the degree to which he loses legitimacy there in Pakistan. So it was in both sides' interests, I guess, to lie about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that the whole relationship with Pakistan is called into question in these cables, too. Because at the same time, I mean, I guess this is again, more common knowledge now that the U.S. believes that the Pakistani intelligence service is basically supporting al-Qaeda and the Taliban. But, you know, a year ago when these cables came out, you know, the U.S. was putting on a very public face saying how much they supported Pakistan. You know, we give them $2 billion a year in military aid. But all these cables were uniformly basically said that the U.S. diplomats consider the ISI a terrorist organization, basically. So this stuff was, you know, it's kind of in the news now. Congressmen are commenting on it. Even the Department of Defense and the CIA comment on it now, but it wasn't known at the time. And so this kind of broke the whole story open, I think.
Mm-hmm. And now, I guess I ought to mention here, this article is really derived because it's the anniversary of the beginning of the leaks of the State Department diplomatic cables. That's what this is a rundown of, not the Iraq and Afghan war logs, which, of course, are also available at WikiLeaks.org. I just want to throw that in.
Yeah, because on Monday was the one-year anniversary of Cablegate. So this article focuses on just what the cables did. And the problem is, you know, I probably talk for 1,000 words just about these six countries, but, I mean, there's just thousands and thousands of cables that are important, and this kind of just scratches the surface.
Mm-hmm. I'll go ahead, since you said that, I'll go ahead and throw in one. Rob Prince at Foreign Policy and Focus wrote about these cables that prove that the Americans didn't just help with the Ethiopian invasion of 2006. They hired the Ethiopians to do it and put a lot of pressure on them to make them invade Christmas 2006 and turn Somalia upside down ever since. And that was a very important one that didn't get that much coverage, but maybe it got as little coverage as it is important, you know?
I know. You know what? I could probably write a whole nother article on cables that should have got more coverage that didn't, and that's the problem with this.
Maybe you should do that, but I'm sorry to interrupt.
I know. I would actually love to, because, you know, part of the reason I wrote this article was to show how the media used these cables to their advantage, and how the New York Times, you know, half of their issues in 2011 referenced WikiLeaks cables, yet at the same time they refused to stand up for Julian Assange and WikiLeaks as there's a grand jury investigation going on, basically saying trying to criminalize national security journalism. And I think it's really kind of sad that they have used WikiLeaks for so much reporting and yet refuses to stand up for the First Amendment and a free press. And the fact that if WikiLeaks is ever charged for anything and convicted, that the New York Times has the most to lose, because they print classified information all the time, even when it doesn't include WikiLeaks. You know, there's if you open up the paper every week, there's an article from a government leak that the New York Times has on the front page. And if WikiLeaks ever gets convicted, the government will have a lot easier time kind of censoring this information, telling the New York Times, you know, we might charge you, so you better drop the story.
Right. All right, now we have just a couple of minutes before this first break here. Why don't you tell us about the effect of WikiLeaks with our relations with Iraq? Because this is one of the most important stories of the year, I think.
Yeah, you know what? I think this is getting this isn't getting enough attention, because so basically the backstory is there was an incident in 2006 where the U.S. forces went into a house and killed a bunch of innocent people, including women and children. And the U.S. tried to cover this up by then sending a drone in and blowing up essentially all the evidence. This was reported at the time, but when the cable came out, it kind of shed new light on the incident and made the U.S. look a lot worse than the original report. Now, at the same time this was going on, Iraq and U.S. were negotiating to keep troops in Iraq longer than the 2011 deadline. And so the Iraqi negotiators found out about this cable, they read about it, and were furious, and basically decided that they weren't going to allow any U.S. troops to stay any longer. There was plans to keep thousands, perhaps tens of thousands, perhaps past the deadline. And so the WikiLeaks cable actually ended up ending the war early.
All right, we'll have to hold it right there. We'll be right back after this break with Trevor Tim from the Electronic Frontier Foundation, EFF.org. His article's the spotlight today on antiwar.com. Cablegate, 1 year later, how WikiLeaks has influenced foreign policy, journalism, and the First Amendment. We'll get to more of that right after this. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. It's Anti-War Radio. I'm Scott Horton. I'm talking with Trevor Tim from the Electronic Frontier Foundation, EFF.org. And his piece is the spotlight today at antiwar.com. Cablegate, 1 year later, how WikiLeaks has influenced foreign policy, journalism, and the First Amendment. And so he's got a great rundown here, and we've been talking about, you know, how much effect WikiLeaks has had on the world in the last year, and the important stories to come out of it, really the important stories to come out of what has come out of it, like we just talked about with Iraq, where the cables confirm that they massacred men, women, and children, and babies, and called an airstrike to cover it up in Iraq back in 2006, the U.S. Army did, and how they knew it all along and lied about it all along, and how that led to the breakdown in the negotiations for the immunity for American soldiers to stay in Iraq, hence their leaving, with only Hillary's mercenaries left behind, and the CIA. So that's really important. And then, but also Tunisia. Tell us about how, really, this is the story of how the Arab Spring started, was Bradley Manning's heroic gift to mankind.
Yeah, absolutely. This is probably one of the most influential parts of the cables all year. What happened was there's an influential blogging group in Tunisia called Nawat, who actually just won an EFF Pioneer Award because they had been blogging from the start about the what became known as the Jasmine Revolution in Tunisia. So people in Tunisia were already pretty much fed up with their president Ben Ali, or their president, quote-unquote, who was basically a dictator. And they had already started protesting in the streets when Nawat made a deal with WikiLeaks to get all of the Tunisian cables. Nawat set up their own website called TuniLeaks and widely distributed the cables to all the Tunisians who had never read them before. And so even though the U.S. was friends with Ben Ali, the cables basically painted this brutal picture of him as, you know, someone who was corrupt, was a dictator, was a tyrant. And
let that be a lesson, too, whenever the State Department is shaking your hand and smiling at you. This is sound like when they're talking behind your back.
Exactly. They were telling the truth, even behind closed doors, even if they weren't in public. So once the Tunisian people found out about this, they were worried that the U.S. basically supported this guy wholeheartedly. And once they found out that the U.S. knew what they knew, they were emboldened. And this kind of fanned the flames of what was going on there. And eventually Amnesty International would say that WikiLeaks and the media partners were catalysts in this revolution. So they were really credited with directly affecting this peaceful revolution into a democratic society. So
yeah, I mean, the way I understood it at the time that the young man, I'm sorry, I forget his name now, set himself on fire in protest over the inflation and the local police state that wouldn't even let him sell vegetables on the side of the road. The backdrop for that was basically 6 weeks of discussion, maybe 2 months of discussion about these WikiLeaks cables and the whole country being, you know, brought into paying very close attention to this developing story about the corruption of their government. So then this guy set himself on fire in protest over it, and people just reacted. You know, the CIA could have never come up with a revolution like that where everyone just storms out in the street and says they've had enough of this.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is kind of, you know, we hear all the time that, you know, the CIA is infuriated by WikiLeaks or the Department of Defense or the State Department. But, you know, it's if their stated goals are to bring more democratic societies, it actually is helping their cause. I think another great example is Egypt, which their revolution kind of happened right after Tunisia's. I don't think we can say that the WikiLeaks cables directly influenced Egyptians because they were pretty much fed up with their government at the time. And you know, they knew that their citizens were being tortured and they had enough. But there was really no better resource for the rest of the world in understanding the relationship between the U.S. and Egyptians and what was going on in Egypt with their citizens and their police force than the WikiLeaks cables. Basically, the cables told of the U.S.'s really close ties with Mubarak. You know, Hillary Clinton had previously said that Mubarak and his family were close friends, personal friends with the Clintons. And the long history and relationship with the U.S. military and the Egyptian military. You know, their generals come over here and get trained and then go back to Egypt to carry out their orders. And the cables tell just some horrible stories about torture that was going on in these countries. Just an unflinching look at, you know, police brutality was, quote, routine and pervasive, according to the cables. And, you know, the use of torture by the government was so widespread that they weren't even denying that they tortured anymore. And it's funny that these cables say that, because for the decade previous in the Bush administration, we were actually sending detainees to Egypt to essentially be tortured.
Yeah, well, back in the Clinton years too, Michael Scheuer said if you wanted somebody to disappear completely, that's where you sent them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it started under Clinton, and was obviously expanded under Bush. But these were the prisons that we were sending these people to, even though we were supposed to be getting assurances from them that they weren't torturing, which obviously was, you know.
Do you happen to know, did the WikiLeaks say anything about the assassination of Rafik Hariri in Beirut in 2005?
You know what? I'm not exactly sure, but I wouldn't be surprised.
I think I'm going to go look that up later on. If I can remember to.
Yeah, that'd be interesting, actually. I wonder if there's any...
Because they're obviously lying when they said that Assad did it. So I wonder if they admit that they're lying in the cables, you know?
Yeah, that'd be interesting, actually.
All right, now, so here's the thing, too, and this is really the point of your article. I want to give you a chance to talk about it here. The long-term impact, this is... it's such good journalism that it's really provoked a police state response here, as you were starting to talk about in the previous segment here, where you really could just have journalism outlawed.
Yeah, the reaction by the U.S. government has been so hyperbolic and so outrageous, especially because they know it's protected by the First Amendment, publishing classified information. All of these documents are classified secret or below. Actually, a majority of them aren't even classified at all. They're just under for official eyes only or things like that. Some of them are classified secret. But the problem with that is that the private citizens aren't regulated by the classification system. That's set up by executive order and applies to government officials. Once it's leaked to the media is free to publish it. This goes all the way back to the Pentagon Papers case in the 1970s, where the Supreme Court said that the government can't censor papers for publishing classified information. And the Pentagon Papers were actually at a higher classification than the WikiLeaks documents. They were top secret, which is the highest. But yet, at the same time, the government decided to come down hard on WikiLeaks. And as you may know, when they found out that they were constitutionally barred from censoring themselves, they pressured payment processors like Visa and MasterCard and PayPal to stop doing business with WikiLeaks, even though they had done nothing illegal. And now they have this grand jury going on where they're investigating WikiLeaks for violations of the Espionage Act, which is a law that was written in World War I that was supposed to, I guess, stop dissent, essentially, back in 1917. But, you know, it wasn't used for decades, and it has been used a few times to go after government leakers. But it's never used to go after private citizens and especially media organizations, because, like I said, this stuff's protected by the First Amendment. Papers do it all the time. But so what this will end up happening is if WikiLeaks is convicted, even though... You know, they're looked at differently from the government than the New York Times is or the Washington Post is. It won't matter under the letter of the law, because essentially what WikiLeaks is doing is exactly what the New York Times does, is exactly what the Washington Post does, which is collect information from government officials and publish it, truthful information that is in the public interest. So the New York Times has been busy ignoring this story. They don't really report on the grand jury, and they especially haven't stuck up for WikiLeaks in their editorial pages.
Or
Bradley Manning, absolutely. And which is funny you bring Bradley Manning up, because there was his lawyer came out the other day and said that he believes that there's three studies done by the White House, the Defense Department, and State Department on how much WikiLeaks damaged national security. And apparently all three of them came to the conclusion that there was no damage to national security. So they're going on this witch hunt for WikiLeaks and torturing Bradley Manning for something that actually didn't hurt them.
Yep. All right, well, I'm sorry we got to leave it there. We're all out of time, but I really appreciate your time on the show today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Everybody, that's Trevor Timm from the Electronic Frontier Foundation, EFF.org. His piece is The Spotlight today on antiwar.com. Cablegate, 1 year later. We'll be right back.